usual scouting pattern to the left, right, and rear. The ships lifted off and darted away into the night.
Heard all kinds of stories about the equatorial forests. Cham said to her,
Me too, she said.
Lilac hordes, huge carnivorous primates, killer plants, you name it. But Vader's the worst thing we're going to find out here, he said. She nodded.
Before long, Phelan's voice came over the comlink.
I'm on station.
Continuing on to Nordon's coordinates, Callan said.
I'll be out of reach of all but Phelan in moments.
Let us know what you see, Cham said.
Cham, Isfahl, and Gaul and his team picked their way through the cages of exposed tree roots and the towering columns of tree trunks. The amount of movement in the canopy far above them caused a steady rain of sticks, leaves, and other debris.
Isfahl felt exposed, watched.
The forest quieted as they closed on the wrecked ship.
Gaul pulled his men back in close. The group fell silent as they neared the site.
You and two more with Isfahl and me,
Cham said to Gaul, who selected two of his team and ordered the rest to remain behind for support. Cham and Isfahl quietly advanced the final 200 meters to the crash site, weapons drawn. They could smell the stink of burned plastic as they approached, and they could see that a dozen or so trees had been sheared in half by a falling ship, the treetops crashing to the forest floor. Cham and Isfahl halted at the edge of the tree line. The wreckage of a ship lay strewn about the clearing and nearby forest, mixed with tons of soil and trees displaced by the impact. Much of it still smoked, and the central fuselage was mostly intact.
Isfahl cursed. The ship wasn't Imperial. It was what she and Cham had feared. One of the movement's modified freighters. From the dispersal of the ship's wreckage, survivors seemed unlikely. She checked for markings, saw a partial number on part of the fuselage.
It was enough.
Nordon ship, she said. Cham. Cham was staring at the wreckage, a stricken look on his face.
She took him by the arm.
Cham, what's wrong with you?
He turned to face her, his leku twitching once, twice, and the mask came up.
Nothing. I'm fine. That's Nordon's ship.
How'd it get brought down?
She asked, but knew the answer as soon as she asked the question.
Vader,
Cham said.
Isfahl nodded. Somehow Vader had done it.
He'd single-handedly captured Pock's ship and killed everyone aboard, run through a storm of her blaster fire, somehow choked her unconscious from the cockpit of another ship, and now brought down an armed freighter.
Can we do this?
She asked, her voice soft, the words escaping her before she could rein them in.
If Cham had heard her, he gave no sign.
We get their bodies, he said.
Gaul.
Understood,
the huge Twi'lek said, gesturing to two of his men to search the wreckage. Phelan's voice came over the comlink.
Callan is at the coordinates. Scans show a downed ship, damaged but intact. It's an Imperial shuttle.
Do not investigate,
Cham ordered.
Get back here, both of you.
Copy that.
Gaul's team hadn't gone 10 paces out of the tree line before a form crept out from behind the smoking fuselage, the arm of a Twi'lek in its jaws. The creature would have stood taller than a human or a Twi'lek, but its posture was hunched. Its insectoid-looking legs moved in a rapid, herky-jerky fashion, and its thin arms ended in curved claws as large as meat hooks. A humped, spiked carapace bulged on its back, and its misshapen head was mostly tooth-filled mouth and over-large eyes.
The men froze.
Isfahl and Cham cursed as one, lifting their weapons to take aim.
Good cool,
Cham whispered, and Isfahl nodded.
Ease back,
she said to Gaul's two men, and they started to slowly walk backward. On Ryloth, only Lilacs were more dangerous than the predatory Gutkurs. Isfal had seen blaster shots bounce off a Gutkur's hide more than once.
Slow, Cham said to the men.
Slow and quiet.
Another Gutkur darted out of the wreckage, took the other end of the arm in its jaws, and tried to pull the prize away from its fellow, both of them hissing and growling. A third, fourth, and fifth emerged from the wreckage, and more growls and hisses from within suggested the presence of more Gutkurs, many more.
We are leaving,
Cham said softly.
Quietly now.
Isval hated leaving Nordon's body to the Gutkurs, but there was nothing for it. She wished him a peaceful sleep. The wind picked up, blowing at their back, showering them in needles and leaves and twigs. Isval cursed again, knowing what it meant. As one, the Gutkurs whirled around to face in their direction, rising up on their legs, fanged mouths open as if tasting the wind.
If they have our scent, Cham said, we use suppressing fire and retreat to the clearing. A retreat, not a rout.
The Gutkurs lowered themselves back into a crouch, and several of them uttered a sound like a harsh bark. One of them turned a circle in excitement. Four more bounded out of the wreckage, including the largest of the pack, a female. She thumped into the smaller Gutkurs near her, asserting dominance, and growled loudly. The pack encircled her, hissing excitedly. She reared up to her full height, mouth open.
She's got us,
Isval whispered.
Maybe not,
Cham said, but the words lacked conviction. Gol's team reached the tree line. The pack leader fell back into a hunched crouch, roared and bounded toward them. The entire pack fell in behind her, their claws throwing up divots of dirt. Cham and Isval fired their blasters, and Gol's team followed their lead. Red lines slammed into the leading Gutkurs, sending them tumbling to the ground. Their fellows leapt over them, or thudded into them, but those that were shot rolled back onto their feet and continued to run.
Back to the clearing,
Cham ordered.
Run, but don't get separated.
They turned and sprinted back through the forest, turning every few moments to fire into the pack. The Gutkurs hissed and roared, crashing through the dead wood and underbrush in their eagerness to feed. In moments, Isval, Cham, and the rest reached the support team they'd left behind them. Gol shouted at them.
Gutkurs! Suppressing fire and an organized retreat back to the clearing!
A grenade explosion to the right splintered a tree and sent pieces of Gutkur flying into the air. Isval called Phelan over the comlink.
Phelan, we need you back at the clearing right now and set down with the doors open!
What? What's happening down there? Are you under attack?
Yes,
Isval said.
Hurry! On my way!
Isval vaulted over roots, ducked under tree limbs. She and Cham and three of Gaul's people turned, took position at the base of a large tree, and fired back into the onrushing pack. Shots bounced off the creature's hides, but the impact at least sent them careening backward.
They're spreading out!
Gol shouted, firing left.
Trying to encircle us! Grenades!
More explosions to the right and left, angry hisses from the Gutkurs.
Keep moving!
Isval said, standing and running back in the direction of the clearing.
Just keep moving!
From the right, a Gutkur leapt high over a fallen tree and landed on the back of one of Gol's people. She rolled over, shouting, and tried to bring her blaster rifle to bear, but too slowly. The Gutkur's hooked claws tore through her clothes and unzipped her abdomen, spilling gore. Isval cursed and shot it through the head once, twice, and it collapsed atop its victim, dead.
Gotta leave her,
Cham said, pulling at Isval's arm. She backed off, firing at anything moving in the trees, then turned and ran.
ETA, Phelan!
Isval called over the comlink.
30 seconds!
There's too many of them!
One of Gaul's crew shouted. From her right, Isfal heard someone scream in pain. Blaster shots rang out, along with curses, growls, and hisses.
Keep firing and keep moving!
Cham yelled, his blaster rifle painting the air with lines of energy. Above, Isfal heard the hum of the escort boat as it flew low over the trees.
Can you see us on scan?
Isfal called to Phelan. She spotted a Gudkur in the underbrush and fired a series of shots at it, but she couldn't tell if she'd hit it.
Yes. What are those things? There are dozens of them.
Gudkurs. A whole pack,
Isfal said, and fired into the trees. She hit a Gudkur in the side and sent it sprawling. The pack had spread out and slowed their pursuit, forming an arc. She had no doubt some of them were circling wide to get behind them and cut off the retreat.
Can you put down some fire?
Fire? But I'm not...
You can do it, Phelan! We need it! Our blasters aren't getting it done!
All right, got it.
Hold the line here!
Cham shouted to the team.
Incoming fire! Close ranks! Close ranks!
Cham, Isfal, Gaul, and his surviving people clustered at the top of a low rise behind a tree, everyone gasping. They took aim at anything that moved and filled the forest with fire. Gudkurs hissed and growled out in the darkness. Blaster fire from the escort boat rained out of the sky, thick bolts of plasma that tore through the trees and slammed into the ground. Trees splinted, cracked, and toppled. Clouds of soil exploded around them. Gudkur screamed and howled. Acrid smoke filled the air.
Hold fire, Phelan!
Cham ordered.
We're moving! Now!
The group stood, turned, and sprinted for the clearing, leaping over roots and deadwood. The Gudkurs must have seen them, for they roared and shrieked and bounded through the trees. One of Gaul's men stumbled and fell in front of Isfal. She heaved him up by his armpits, fired blindly back over her shoulder, and they ran on together.
The boat's blasters dispersed the pack, but they're still coming after you,
Phelan said over the comlink.
Circling wide on both sides. Hurry!
Get to the clearing, Phelan,
Isfal ordered. To the rest of the group, she shouted,
Run!
They didn't bother firing anymore. They just ran as fast as they could, the sound of the pursuing Gudkurs hard on their heels. The boat buzzed overhead, audible through the forest canopy, and set down not far ahead. Isfal caught movement out of her peripheral vision from time to time, and she thought the trees would never end. But then they did, opening into the clearing. Phelan already had the passenger compartment doors open.
Move! Move!
Cham said, waving everyone past. Isfal fell in with him and Gaul, and the three of them blanketed the tree line with blaster fire. She couldn't tell if they hit anything.
Let's go!
Cham said, and they turned and ran. The moment they did, they saw several Gudkurs break from the trees to their left, pelting over the clearing toward the rest of the group, which hadn't yet reached the ship. Isfal took aim with both blasters as she ran. She fired once, twice, hitting the two leading creatures in the sides of their heads, causing both to tumble to the ground dead. Cham and Gaul sprayed the last two with so much blaster fire that it blackened their carapaces and knocked them down and 5 meters back. Gudkurs broke from the tree line behind and to the right. The rest of Gaul's crew took position just outside the ship's open door and fired in teams at the creatures. But that didn't stop them. They dashed across the clearing, a dozen or more, closing on the ship. Isfal, Gaul, and Cham ran, Cham shouting, Get aboard! Get aboard! Gaul's people ceased firing and ran up the gangplank and into the compartment. Isfal, Cham, and Gaul just behind. The moment they were inside, Isfal slammed her hand on the button to close the door. It started to rise, and just then, two Gudkurs grabbed it and tried to scramble inside. Cham and Gaul shared a look, raised their weapons as one, and fired. The blaster shot drove both creatures off the ramp, and the hatch closed fully. Gaul did a quick head count and took stock of injuries.
Four lost, he said softly to Cham. The rest are good.
Cham's expression fell for a moment, but only Isval could have noticed. He nodded and put a hand on Gaul's shoulder. After Gaul moved back to debrief his surviving crew, Cham said to Phelan over the comlink, Get us to Nordon's coordinates.
On the way, Phelan said. Everything all right back there?
Cham shook his head but said,
As well as can be.
Isval stepped to Cham's side. She almost touched him but held back.
What is it?
And don't you dare tell me nothing is wrong.
He didn't look at her, but he answered in a quiet monotone.
Been a long day is all.
A lie, she said. Tell me.
You really want to know?
She wasn't sure she did, but she nodded anyway.
We've thrown everything we had at this, he said. In one day, I've spent almost the entirety of the resources I built up over years.
She let her voice fall to an angry whisper.
We've lost less than 30 of our people, and we brought down a Star Destroyer. That's not a bad trade.
He looked at her then, and his eyes were pained.
30 is a lot, Isval.
She recoiled at the implication of her own words.
I know. Of course it is, I know.
I know you know, he said.
But it's not just that. Almost every ship we had is gone.
And when the Empire does a post-action analysis of today, they'll bring everything to bear. They'll have to.
They'll track down our bases and they'll track us down.
We'll have to disperse after today, at least most of us.
That's best case.
She was shaking her head.
Why didn't you say this before?
We could have...
We could have what?
Done nothing?
Let this opportunity pass?
Isval's stomach hollowed out.
No, but I didn't realize.
You didn't realize there'd be nothing left afterward?
I know. I'm not sure I did either. But I've been thinking about it since the Perilous went down, and it's becoming clear to me now. It's a hard truth, but we might as well square up to it. After today, the movement as it exists is done.
She still refused to believe it.
No, wait. Listen. The Empire's not good enough to track our bases or us. We've dodged them for years.
We've dodged them with Belcore as our puppet. He's done after this. We both know that.
Isval didn't deny it. Belcore had perhaps convinced himself that he could survive the day's events, but Isval knew better. No story Belcore could craft would keep him away from Imperial security investigators.
We can rebuild the movement, she said. The same way we built it in the first place.
He smiled, but it looked forced.
I don't have it in me, Isval. The hole in her stomach grew larger.
There is no movement without you, she whispered.
He shook his head. It's bigger than me. And if we start a galaxy-wide rebellion, Ryloth will have a chance at freedom.
No. The movement's an idea, not a person.
She knew it wasn't. She knew Ryloth needed him.
She knew she needed him.
You're wrong, she said.
I'm right. And the fight will go on, Isval. But after this, it'll have to fall to someone else to lead.
He grimaced.
I'll do what I can, even after today. But we don't have enough tools left to do much more than what we've done. We'll start the fire by killing Vader and the Emperor.
It's just that someone else is going to have to fan the flames and burn the Empire down.
Closing in,
Phelan said over the comlink.
Vader, the Emperor, and the two surviving royal guards put kilometers behind them as night ate the last of the day. The darkness deepened as they picked their way through the uneven ground, the tangle of roots, the columns of tree trunks. The darkness seemed to amplify sound, isolate it, echo it back, until Vader's breathing filled the forest. The moons hadn't risen, and it would be hours before they did. The forest canopy hid the meager light of the stars, leaving them in a sea of ink. Vader's armor allowed him to see in infrared and several other spectrums, and the Royal Guard's armor too could compensate for low light. But the Emperor... Vader spared a glance to his left, at his master, who walked confidently through the darkness. The Emperor saw clearly, saw everything as ever. Creatures large and small moved through the foliage at the edge of Vader's vision, slinking, crawling, loping. Animals prowled the forest's canopy high above, predators hunting prey. From time to time, the abortive squeal of something dying punctuated the quiet.
"It's instructive, isn't it, this place?"
his master asked.
"It is unforgiving of weakness."
"It is,"
his master said.
"The weak are found out and killed by the strong."
"As it must be."
"As it must be, indeed."
"But sometimes the strong mistake their strength,"
Vader dared to add.
"And so demonstrate weakness."
"Do they?"
his master commented, and Vader said nothing more. Long into the hours of night, Vader walked beside his master, silent but for the respirator. He would stop or not as his master commanded. Before long, the breathing of the guardsmen sounded not unlike Vader's. They were taxed, but still his master pressed on. Eventually his master stopped and held up a hand.
"You can rest here for a time, Captain.
But not long. We will press on again soon."
"Thank you, my Emperor,"
said the Captain, and he and Dee set about making a hurried camp. In moments they had a small campfire going. Vader stood near it, staring down into the flames. His master sat cross-legged in a pose of meditation. Tension hung between Vader and his master. Tension whose provenance Vader could not quite place.
"Master."
"Do you think treachery begins in the deed, my friend?"
"No. It begins in the thoughts."
His master showed teeth. Perhaps a smile. Perhaps a snarl.
"And yet, we can't know the thoughts of another, especially those of a traitor, who guards his thoughts closely so as not to reveal his treachery. And so we must draw out the thoughts to have them manifest in deeds, and thus reveal the truth. Do you agree?"
Vader stared into the flames.
"I hear nothing with which to disagree."
Again the smile or snarl from his master.
"You were a traitor, were you not, Lord Vader?"
Vader's breathing caught on the hook of sudden anger.
"What did you say?"
"To the Jedi, to Padme, to Obi-Wan, to all those you loved."
His master turned to look at him, his eyes reflecting the flames. Vader didn't know the answer his master wanted to hear, so he simply answered with the truth.
"Yes."
His master turned his eyes back to the fire. The captain of the Royal Guard sat on the ground across from them.
"You should remove your helmet, Captain,"
the Emperor said.
"It must wear on you to have it on all the time."
"Thank you, my Emperor,"
the captain said. He removed his helmet to reveal a mien familiar to Vader, the scarred face of a clone. the features an echo of so many faces from Vader's past. Rex, Cody, Sixes, Echo. The roster of names moved through Vader's mind, each of them a trigger for a memory, each of them a ghost from his past. Is there an Imperial installation nearby, my lords? The captain asked. Sergeant Deez removed his helmet too, showing a face that wasn't that of a clone. A clean-shaven, axe-jawed human with short-cropped blonde hair and tattoos of abstract patterns inked on his cheeks. If Deez had been a clone, Vader imagined they'd have called him Ink.
What are we looking for, my lords?
Deez asked. Vader's master stared into the glow of the fire.
Oh, I think we'll know when we find it, Sergeant.
Of course, my lord, said the captain.
He broke out pre-made meals for himself and his comrade. Neither the Emperor nor Vader ate. Instead, both meditated, communing with the Force, Vader standing, his master seated. Vader, still pondering his master's words, drifted into the Force, let its rough currents pull him where it willed. As was so often the case, he saw moments from his past, a series of inchoate, violent, pain-filled images and sounds. His decapitation of Darth Tyrannus, the first kill his master had asked of him. Padme screams. His murder of the younglings in the Jedi Temple, their eyes wide with a fear that only fed his righteous wrath. Padme screams, her pain. Treachery. Mace Windu shouts of rage as he'd realized the truth. Padme screams, traitor. The fires of Mustafar, his hatred for Obi-Wan, who'd feared him and tried to keep him from his destiny, who'd tried to take Padme from him, who'd put him in the armor. Padme screams, her despair.
No, Anakin, no!
Vader opened his eyes, his fists clenched, his anger overflowing, to see his master standing across the fire from him, staring at him. His master's expression was unreadable, his features partially hidden within the depths of his hood. Vader sensed the anger in his master, sensed, too, the threat that lived in that anger. Vader did not fear it, not at that moment.
Where are the guards?
The royal guards were nowhere to be seen.
How long was I?
I sent them away. They will return soon.
A long silence, then.
What did you see as you meditated?
I saw deaths and faces from my past. The events that led me to this moment. I see them frequently when I consider the destiny the Force has for me.
His master's anger grew, though his expression did not change. His voice was the low murmur of a predator.
Your destiny, yes. I have seen hints of it as well.
For a moment, caught up in the after effects of his vision, Vader wondered what it would be like to face his master in battle. To take his small, frail body in his hands, lift it from the ground, and... He cut off the thoughts, but his master had sensed them, for his face split in a dark smile.
I see you, apprentice.
And I see you, master. You think I long for the past when I see it in visions, but you're wrong. I don't long for it. I think of it and the man I was then, and regard it all with contempt. And the only thing that makes it tolerable to ponder is that it ends with me here, in this armor, with you. I feel no longing. I feel no regret. My memories feed my anger. And my anger feeds my strength. And so am I able to serve you and the Force better. Your doubt.
Continue.
Vader did, heedless of what might come next.
Your doubt is unwarranted and angers me.
Several moments passed, each Sith Lord staring across the flames at the other. Finally, Vader stepped around the fire and fell to one knee before his master. He felt his master's eyes on him, the eyes that saw deeply into everything. He imagined his master considering options.
The guards are returning, his master said. And they are not alone. Rise, Lord Vader.
Chapter 14.
Belkor sat in the co-pilot seat of the small, maneuverable search and rescue craft. They were scouring Ryloth's surface near the equator, the search location based on the data Cham had provided about Morse's descent trajectory.
Hard to run a search in the dark with calm down to line of sight,
Otham, the pilot flying with him, complained.
It is, Belkor said.
Belkor had assembled a team of men who owed him favors, men who wore the uniform but had no particular loyalty to the Empire, men who'd do what he asked without too many questions. He'd given them a cover story, of course. The rebels who'd brought down the Perilous had done so in the guise of Imperial troops with the apparent aid of Moff Deelian Mors. Belkor had a general location for the Moff ship, which loyal Imperial troops had almost brought down. Belkor told the men that they were among a select group to whom he'd confided, because he didn't know how deep the conspiracy might run. If anyone suspected him of concocting a story, none of them had spoken up. They owed Belkor their positions and the perks of power. They owed Mors nothing.
Run through the search grid again.
He transmitted to the four V-wings flying beside his search and rescue craft.
Fly a comm ladder. I need to know what you see.
They acknowledged his order and veered off to search again. They'd staggered their formation so that one was always in contact with another, and that one with yet another, and so on all the way back to Belkor's ship. Maintaining the formation required constant attention and limited their ability to search.
Anything from the three V-wings to the south? He asked Otham.
Nothing, sir.
Belkor looked out the glass bubble cockpit of the craft. Much of the bubble was lit with the heads-up display of the craft's elaborate sensor array. The bubble itself provided light amplification, so he could look out and down on the terrain as if it were dusk. Ryloth's forest stretched out below, banded to the south by a desert dotted with tors. He clenched his jaw in frustration.
I take that back, sir,
Otham said, holding a finger up to the headset he wore.
One of the V-wings is reporting smoke.
Where?
Otham put a finger on the screen to show the location. Close to the equatorial communications hub. The smoke was probably the result of the attack on the hub that Belkor had enabled. Still, he had nothing else. Mors could have gone down near the hub. The smoke could be from her ship.
Go, he said to Otham. Send the V-wings the coordinates. They're to continue their check of the grid.
Then we rendezvous at the communications hub. Otham nodded, accelerating, and the nimble SNR craft darted through the cutting winds.
Anything from the V-wing on station near the smoke?
Belkor asked. Otham shook his head.
Dead air, sir. They broke up the comm ladder when you ordered the rendezvous at the hub.
Belkor cursed. He wouldn't know anything more until he was close enough to see for himself. Within a few minutes, he'd convinced himself that it was Morse's shuttle, that it had gone down near the hub, and that the moth had died on impact. But his fantasy broke on the rocks of reality as the lights of the hub came into view in the distance.
Incoming from the V-wing on station, said Otham. Smoke is from the equatorial communications hub.
But?
The hub suffered an attack, which explains the success of the jamming signal,
and I think you should contact the commander of the station.
What? Why?
Sir, the V-Wing pilot reports that Moff Mors was here.
Belcour wasn't sure he'd heard correctly.
What did you say?
Ophim looked skeptical.
According to one of our men, the Moff was here.
When? How? Is she still here?
I don't know, though I gather she is not here now.
Belcour's mind started working through possibilities. The Moth had survived the downing of her shuttle and had ended up at the communications hub.
Before or after the attack? What's that, sir?
Belcour felt the sweat forming under his shirt anew.
Nothing, Ophim, speaking to myself. Get Major Borkus on the line.
Through the bubble of the recon craft, he stared down at the distant smoking ruins of the communications hub. Cham's team had done a thorough job on the dishes, which lay in jagged, bent piles. Dozens of droids and men and ships, working in the glow of portable lights, buzzed around one of the fallen dishes, working to get it repaired. Belcour wasn't thinking clearly, he realized. He had not been prepared for Mors to have made it away from her ship, much less into the hands of an officer like Steen Borkus. Mors could already have deduced Belcour's involvement in the day's events. She hadn't attempted to contact Belcour after the crash, after all. She could have shared her suspicions with Borkus, could be on her way back to the communications center at that moment. Belcour could return to find a security team waiting for him. All at once he felt weak, like he was nothing but liquid, like he would drain away. Ophim nodded when communications were established. Belcour cleared his throat and gathered himself.
This is Colonel Belcour Dre. Am I speaking to Major Borkus?
Colonel Dre?
The voice did not sound like Borkus's.
Major Borkus isn't here. I am Captain Narin. The Major left with Moff Mors over an hour ago.
Belcour looked over at Ophim and cut off the comm for a moment. Did anyone tell them anything about the Moth's betrayal?
No, sir, Ophim said. Need to know, you said.
Good. Belcour reactivated the comm. Left for where, Narin?
She, Borkus, and a squad of stormtroopers took two ships on a rescue mission. VIPs who escaped the Perilous, as I understand things. You're here to assist? Those must be some VIPs, sir, to bring the whole High Command down the equator.
You've no idea, Belcour thought but didn't say. He tried to process what he'd heard. The Moth was still attempting to find Vader and the Emperor, which meant she knew, or at least believed, that they'd survived the explosion of the Perilous and its immediate aftermath. That made sense. The Moth could perhaps save her office, or at least her life, if she was the hero leading the team that found Vader and the Emperor. But she hadn't tried to contact Belcour. Did the Moth arrive before or after the attack on the station?
Afterwards, sir.
That might explain it. Did she dispatch anyone to send word to the communications center that she was alive? Or that she was searching for the VIPs?
Let me check, sir,
said Narin. After a lengthy silence, the captain returned.
No, sir, she did not. But she and the Major were in a hurry.
No doubt, Belcour said, feeling certain that the Moth had deduced his treachery.
Sir, I don't have the coordinates the Moth and the Major are searching. And with calm being line of sight, we've no way to raise them and alert them that you're en route.
That's quite all right, Captain. I know the search coordinates.
Sir, if you don't mind my asking, what in the hell is going on out there?
I don't have time to brief you fully, Narin. Terrorists have struck the Empire. That's all you need to know for now. How long before normal communication is possible?
We're focusing our efforts on Dish 3. 9 hours, sir. Maybe a bit less.
9 hours.
Belcour had 9 hours to find the Moth and arrange for her demise.
What else can we do for you, sir? If we can help with these terrorists...
Nothing, Belcour replied. You've been most helpful already. We'll be on our way immediately.
Good luck, sir.
The moment they cut the comm, Belcour said to Ophim, "So we know that Borkus is in league with the Moth."
"They aren't rescuing any VIPs from the Perilous," Ophim said.
"Agreed," Belcour said, running with it. "Probably meeting other collaborators or rendezvousing with the terrorists."
"We'll get them, sir," Ophim said.
"Yes, we will," said Belcour. The Moth had 2 ships and some stormtroopers. Belcour had the search and rescue recon craft and 6 V-Wings. If he could catch the Moth in the air, it would be over in moments. "Here are the coordinates," he said, feeding Ophim the site where Cham thought Vader and the Emperor had gone down. "Alert the V-Wings and let's get on our way."
"Yes, sir."
Vader sensed it, a hostile, hungry wave coursing toward them through the thick forest. The Royal Guards broke through the tree line at a full run, blaster rifles hanging from their hands. The sergeant had lost his helmet, and his eyes were wide and white in the mask of his tattoos. The ground vibrated slightly, and the foliage behind them shook as whatever was in pursuit charged hard after them. The captain stumbled as he ran, but managed to keep his feet. He waved for Vader and the Emperor to retreat.
"Run, my lords!"
the captain shouted, his voice muffled by his helmet.
"We need a more defensible position!"
"Defensible from what?"
Vader asked, igniting his lightsaber.
"Lilacs, my lord! More than..."
Vader heard them then. The insectoid clicking and hissing of Ryloth's apex predator carried on the wind. From the sound, he judged there to be 12 or so of the huge creatures, all tearing through the forest and closing fast.
"Lilacs," the Emperor said. "Interesting."
"My lords!"
the captain said as he reached them, gasping.
"They'll be on us in moments. We should move."
Deez aimed his blaster rifle back at the trees.
"Seconds only, captain,"
he said tensely. Vader activated his saber and took position beside the Emperor. Seeing this, the sergeant and the captain stood near the Emperor too, rifles ready. They didn't have long to wait. The Lilacs burst through the trees, huge insectoid creatures that bounded over logs, the pair of tentacles near their mandibles squirming. Seeing Vader, the Emperor, and the guards, they hissed and rushed forward. The guards fired, their rifles riding red streaks in the air. The bolt struck the Lilacs, but bounced off their carapaces, deflecting into the trees. Vader raised his hand, seized one of the leading Lilacs with the force, and flung it sideways into the trees. It struck a tree trunk as thick around as a man, and its ridged, spiked carapace cracked open, leaving it squirming helplessly at the base of the tree. Beside Vader, his master gestured with both hands, and jagged lines of forced lightning shot forth, striking 2 of the foremost Lilacs, lifting the creatures from the ground and driving them backward, tumbling, hissing, screaming in agony, dying. When his master ended the lightning, he drew his lightsaber, and he and Vader moved forward as one, each protecting the other as they twisted and spun out of the way of the Lilac's tentacles and snapping mandibles, slashing and severing legs, tentacles, heads. In moments, the forest was still, and Vader and his master stood back to back in the midst of the carnage. Both deactivated their weapons. The sergeant and the captain simply stared at them, their blaster rifles hanging uselessly from their gloved hands. The Emperor cocked his head, as though hearing something from far away.
"There are more."
Alerted, Vader attuned himself to the Force. He felt them coming.
"More Lilacs."
many more.
This terrain is poor for a stand against so many, Master.
Vader said, feeling the lilac horde draw closer. A rushing sound came from the forest like an incoming tide.
There are hundreds,
he added, hearing the snapping of limbs, the hisses of the lilacs, the insectoid chittering.
At least.
Agreed.
The Emperor said absently, his voice as calm as still water.
Let's find a more suitable spot to face these creatures, Captain.
The Captain sagged with relief.
Yes, my lord. Follow me.
Tadizi said,
take the rear, Sergeant.
With that, the Captain turned and bolted through the forest, leaping logs and skirting tree trunks. Vader deactivated his lightsaber, and he and his master kept pace. Vader noticed that the forest had quieted around them. There was only his breathing and the distant clicking and chittering of the pursuing horde, the snapping of wood, the low rumble of the lilac's collective tread. They were gaining.
I don't see any of them yet, Dee said.
They're still coming.
Vader presumed the lilacs could smell them somehow, or had a keen sense of hearing, or used some other sense to hunt. The four men broke into a clearing covered in low grass and brush and dashed across it. The exhausted breathing of the royal guards now sounded as loud to Vader as his respirator. He still felt the lilacs behind them, their numbers growing as their bloodlust drew more of their kind. He imagined a horde could clear the fauna from a few square miles of forest.
Hurry, my lords!
The captain said. They'd almost crossed the clearing by the time the lilacs broke through the tree line behind them.
There they are! Dee said.
Vader spared a glance back to see that 20 lilacs at least had burst out of the trees, a clicking wall of spiked exoskeletons, tentacles, and mammoth jaws. More followed, more, the horde boiling out of the trees. They clambered over one another in their hunger, a tangle of limbs and claws and clicks. The creatures saw them right away, of course, and uttered a collective hiss and eager clicking. Their thick limbs and great weight threw up chunks of soil and dirt as they lumbered across the clearing. The four men reached the tree line on the opposite side of the clearing and plunged once more into the tangle of trunks and roots.
Look for a cliff or a tunnel. A place where we can channel their attack.
They're closing!
Dees cried, looking back. He fired behind him with his blaster rifle.
Shots! Bounce off the carapaces!
The Emperor gestured with a free hand, using the force to topple trees. They fell into the horde, crushing lilacs, knocking down other trees that crushed still more. The survivors clambered over the dead without pausing, continuing their frenetic pursuit. The captain drew one of the grenades he carried, activated it, and tossed it behind them at the horde. It exploded a couple of seconds later, the boom reverberating through the forest, toppling another tree, and causing shrieks of pain among the lilacs.
Go right, Captain,
the Emperor said.
100 meters from here, there is a tunnel.
The captain did not question, though Vader wondered how his master knew. The captain angled right as the lilacs closed from behind, their huge bodies snapping trees as they came. The distance between the four men and the horde shrank, and both guards fired their rifles one-handed as they ran, the shots blowing up parts of tree trunks and striking lilacs but not slowing the overall advance of the horde. They reached a steep ravine, and the guards started down the side, stumbling and grabbing at roots to stay upright as they descended. Vader and the Emperor leapt down from the top. A creek bisected the ravine. The opposite side was a steep wall of rocks and tree roots and soil that extended as far as they could see to the left and right. The lilacs were still coming.
Where, my Emperor?
The captain asked.
I don't see a tunnel anywhere!
The lead lilacs from the horde poured over the side of the ravine, long limbs digging into the soil,
tentacles grabbing at branches and roots as they scrambled down. Vader activated his lightsaber and stood beside the Emperor, eyeing the side of the ravine for the tunnel. Meanwhile, the captain and Deez shot at everything that moved, their blaster fire lighting up the darkness. Lilacs hissed and chittered.
Hands!
Deez exclaimed as he fired.
A headshot puts them down!
More lilacs came over the side, more, until they looked like a seething avalanche tumbling down the hill.
There,
Vader said, finally spotting the opening, a dark oval low on the face of the valley wall, perhaps 2 meters tall, and partially blocked by exposed tree roots as thick as an arm.
Go, Sergeant!
The captain said to Deez as they all backpedaled quickly toward the tunnel entrance.
Then the Emperor, then Lord Vader. I bring up the rear. Go!
The lilacs rolled toward them, clambering over one another as they came. The petty palps at either side of their large mouths waving spasmodically as if already shoveling flesh into their jaws. Half a dozen lilac carcasses hung in the roots along the side of the ravine, but the rest kept coming. The captain's blaster rifle dropped one with a shot to the head, then another, but the creatures just kept pounding forward. 10 or more had reached the ravine's bottom and clambered wildly toward the men, tentacles squirming, jaws working. Vader raised a hand, fell into the force, and loosed a blast of power that slammed into the lilacs on the ravine's floor, driving them backward, partially back up the ravine's side, and into those that came behind, turning the creature's advance into a chaotic scramble of limbs and agitated clicking. They tore at one another in their frustrated frenzy. Deez ducked into the darkness of the tunnel, followed by the Emperor, followed by Vader, who deactivated his lightsaber, and finally by the captain, who backed in, still firing as he retreated. The tunnel, as black as pitch, went back only a meter before opening into a large cavern that had openings to the left and right and center.
The hillside must be honeycombed with these,
Deez said.
Keep going!
The captain said over his shoulder, still firing out through the mouth of the tunnel.
Move! Move!
No,
Vader said, reigniting his lightsaber.
This is where we stand.
There was movement in the growth at the tunnel's mouth, and then a lilac lurched through, snapping roots, all teeth and hisses, only half a meter from the captain. Vader pushed the captain aside, bounded forward, and drove the blade of his lightsaber into the creature's mouth and out the top of its head. The huge carcass collapsed. Behind it, dozens more lilacs scrambled to get in around their fallen fellow. Vader bowed his head, raised his hand, and loosed a blast of power, eliciting squeals of pain and sending the lilacs flying backward.
Back away,
the Emperor commanded. And Vader and the captain fell back. The Emperor gestured casually, and the tunnel ceiling came down in a shower of rock and dirt. The sound of frustrated hisses and roars carried through the rubble. The four men stood in the light of Vader's lightsaber. He deactivated it, casting them in darkness. The captain turned on his helmet lights.
Listen, Deez said, cocking his head. I think something is down there.
He nodded at the left-hand tunnel. Vader reached out with the force, felt the lilacs coming at them down the side tunnel.
You're correct, Sergeant.
We shouldn't make our stand here, my lords,
said the captain.
They'll be coming at us from both directions.
The lilacs were getting closer, their clicks and hisses growing louder. Deez pulled one of the grenades he carried. Vader grabbed him by the wrist to stop him.
You could collapse the tunnels.
Deez looked embarrassed.
Right. Of course, Lord Vader. Please, my Emperor,
said the captain, gesturing down the central tunnel.
He's right, Master. We should continue.
Agreed,
the Emperor said, and they turned and hurried into the winding central tunnel, which sloped downward, widening as they went. They'd covered maybe 200 meters, moving ever deeper underground, when they heard the first sounds of the lilac's pursuit coming from behind them. Rock formations dotted the floor and thick clumps of crystal hung from the ceiling of the tunnel. But there was nothing that would have made for a defensible pocket. The chitters and hisses bounced off the stone, seeming to race ahead of them.
They're faster than us in this terrain, Dee said. We're going to have to turn and fight.
As the lilacs closed on them, the tunnel seemed to hum under the force of their tread. Soon Vader could hear the clatter of their exoskeletons as they ran over the stone.
They are almost upon us.
The captain fell back, taking station with Dee's at the rear, between the Emperor and the Horde. Vader ignited his lightsaber to provide at least some additional light.
Here they come!
The captain said, and started firing wild, one-handed shots over his shoulder.
I see them!
Said Dee's and started firing, too. Lilac squealed and hissed.
You may use your grenades.
The cavern was wide enough to endure the blast without collapsing. Both guards immediately activated and tossed grenades. 5 seconds later, the tunnel behind them reverberated with the sound of the explosions, lilac screams, and the rumble of falling stone. The blast wave roared from the confines of the tunnel. Vader and the Emperor used the force to deflect the bulk of the wave from them, but the power of it drove the two royal guards face first into the floor, their armor scraping along the stone. Vader turned and used the force to lift both guards to their feet. Dee's was bleeding from the nose and looked stunned.
We won't slow for you again. The Horde is still coming.
As if to make his point, the sounds of the pursuing lilacs rose up from behind, clicking hisses and squeals. Vader took position behind his master as the four of them continued down the tunnel. He sought a place where they could stop and hold their ground, but the tunnel went on and on, not narrowing, with its downward slope diving ever deeper into the planet. Drawing on the force as he ran, he gestured at the ceiling and took hold of several large chunks of crystal stalactites. He rocked them loose with his power, then let them dangle there, waiting for the vibration of the passing Horde to cause them to fall. The tunnel wound left and right as they descended, but Vader saw no side tunnels, just the single tube continuing to burrow into Ryloth's crust. From behind came the boom of falling rock, the crystals Vader had loosened, and the squeals of crushed lilacs. Yet still they came, the Horde seemingly unbreakable, and they were still closing. At the end of a long, sloped straightaway, Vader let the rest of the group run on while he stopped to look back. His helmet reflected the meager light projected by his lightsaber, and he saw the Horde enter the far end of the tunnel, an ocean of legs, tentacles, and mandibles, saw them scrabble over and around the stalagmites that dotted the floor. The beat of their armored, pointed legs put small pits in the stone. Some of them clambered along the walls like giant arachnids, coating the surface of the tunnel behind them. Their tentacles waved as they scurried, jaws working as if already masticating flesh. Vader could not escape the feeling that he was being steered, perhaps by the lilacs, or perhaps by his master. He fell deeply into the force and loosed a wave of power from his outstretched hand that filled the circumference of the tunnel. The blast slammed into the charging Horde, cracking exoskeletons, shattering stalagmites, and driving a score or more of the lilacs in the lead backward in a shower of broken bodies and broken stone. They squealed and chittered and flailed, and the lilacs following after scrambled over the fallen and wounded, their eyes fixed on Vader. Vader was prepared to meet them all, slaughter every one of them then and there, but his master's voice from up the tunnel pulled him around.
Come, Lord Vader.
He deactivated his lightsaber, turned, and hurried forward, using the force to augment his speed and catch up with the other three.
What happened?
Dee's asked, but Vader ignored him. When he reached his master's side, he voiced his thoughts.
Yes,
the Emperor agreed.
The beasts are hurting us, unintentionally, I think.
Hurting us to where?
We'll soon know.
The Emperor said,
I think we should prepare ourselves.
They hustled through the tunnel, which had finally started to narrow.
There's light ahead,
the captain said.
Look!
Vader saw it, a dim green glow coming through a circular opening about a meter and a half in diameter. Soon the tunnel gave way to a large cavern 30 meters across.